Aloha, you're listening to Malama Kauai Radio with Megan Fox on KKCR. Today we're going to take a trip to Wailua to meet some of the people and programs caring for Kauai. We'll learn more about Iola Wailua Nui and an update on cocoa palms, as well as happenings at the CTAR Research Station with their new farm manager, Derek Kiabu. All right, so I am here with Pua Rossi. Talk a little bit about cocoa palms and an update there. So maybe you want to start us off. Thanks for joining us. And tell me a little bit about the nonprofit you guys started. What's happening? What are you working on?
Hi, aloha. Thanks for having me today. So our nonprofit is Iola Wailua Nui. I currently serve as president of the organization, but I always kind of credit Mason Chalk as being sort of he's really the leader. He's our vice president, but he's really the driving force in our hui. And then alongside myself, the other people in our group includes Nikki Cristobal, Micah Bukowski, and Makana Riley. And then we have a lot of other people that have been really helpful along the way in getting us to where we are. So I want to also recognize, like, Terry Tico is another person that's really important to our team.
That's great. That's a good group.
Yeah. I really enjoy working with these people.
And are you guys all from that east side, like Wailua area, or is this important to you all personally for different reasons? Like, what attracted you guys to come together for this mission?
The history of our organization, really, it started off, you know, I let me backtrack a little bit. The history of our group began well before my time. And I want to recognize that there were kupuna and lineal descendants and people from Wailua that felt very passionate about the heiau in the organ, in the ahupua'a of Wailua. And they really kind of set the stage for some of the protocol that we've done in terms of how we've approached Aina and how we've gone into this space. And then when Iniki happened and cocoa palms obviously is in the state that it's, well, not so much now since they've been pulling down the buildings, but how it was for, gosh, 30 years. There were some definite people in the community. I want to recognize Gary Hooser as being one of them that kind of went out there and got activated and really wanted to look at what could be the next steps. Instead of having a hotel there, how can we actually look at maybe this being an educational center or a cultural center? And so right around 2020, during lockdown, really, I got a message from Fern Holland asking if I would be interested in joining this Zoom meeting with other people from Wailua that were going to talk about the future of cocoa palms and was it a possibility of turning it into an educational center. And so the Zoom meetings grew into Iola Wailua Nui. So our organization is fairly new in comparison to the history of all of these wonderful community people and kupuna that really saw Wailua as having potential of returning to what it once was, which was this social, religious, political center that was really thriving, this aina that was really thriving and taking care of so many people in the area. But Iola Wailua Nui, our goal was to really turn Wailua back into what it should be. And just focusing on, there's so much change happening since the hotel was there in terms of climate change, in terms of food security, what are some of the things that we can do to protect that community? And since then, I always say our organization really listens to the community, but we also listen to the aina. And how do we pivot and shift with what the aina needs? Yes, it's what we would like to have, but if that's not what the aina needs, then we also have to pivot. So that's kind of what Iola Wailua Nui is doing, is we're really trying to look at what does the aina need, what does the community need, and we all collectively agree it's not a hotel, so how do we focus our intentions and our energy into something more positive?
Yeah, I mean, we've responded to floods in that area. The area floods all the time. The roads
all the time.
Going on. The road is literally crumbling into the ocean. The bridges flood. The wastewater issues and the smell. I'm surprised
The
anyone
wastewater
would
is
want a
bad.
hotel. Imagine smelling doo-doo when you're at like some fancy vacation, right? It's crazy to me. I swear, part of me thinks it's like a tax shelter because I can't
Oh.
imagine anyone realistically thinking that was a wise investment. So
You know,
tell
it had its moments. It Coco Palms
yeah.
had its moment. I grew up, you know, I'm a lineal descendant on my dad's side of the family. My dad's great grandmother, she was originally from Waialua. And so I was born and raised there, like right up the road from the hotel. And I remember like going listening to music, and Tahiti Fete was a thing, and having all these cultural programs. And I think the first wedding I ever danced at was a friend of ours at Coco Palms. So, you know,
Oh.
it had its moment in history, but it's moved on. You know, like the hotel was in operation for I think 39 years, and it's been shut down for, well, over 30. I think it's 33 now this year. Come
Yeah.
September, I think it's 33 years. So
And
it's like
people
that was
really
a
get hung
beauty.
up on Elvis too. I think that's a
Oh,
big
yeah.
part of like the off-island interest too. It's funny.
Yeah. And Elvis has left the building. Like you
Right.
said,
Yeah, the
it's
building has
time
left
to
the
move
building.
on.
So what are you guys working on now? Like what's ex I know, you know, I definitely want to get an update on like what's going on with the hotel. Is that still in court? Is there any potential that could still not happen? But also, you guys are not just anti the hotel, but you're also for stewardship and community-led activities and educational activities like you're talking about. So maybe you can talk a little bit about all the positive stuff, but also how that hotel situation is being handled and any updates on that.
You know, I'll start with the hotel first. So it's been relatively quiet. To be honest with you, I'm not completely sure where they are in terms of building. I know that majority of the buildings, if not all of the buildings that they were supposed to bring down, have been brought down on that front. I know that majority, if not all of the buildings that they said that they were going to bring down, have been brought down. We haven't heard much in terms of a timeline for construction and when that's all going to happen, but there are so many other factors coming into play in terms of having a hotel. And you mentioned just a minute ago about the wastewater. I mean, that's actually something I think we need to call some attention to, because I know that the wastewater issue is a big one. My parents, like I mentioned, live right up the road from where the hotel once was. And it's bad. It smells really, really bad. And so if people can get it invested in learning about what's happening there, you can smell it. So that needs to be taken care of. Even just protecting, like now we're dealing with the coconut rhinoceros beetle, and we are starting to see it move towards Coco Palms. If I'm not mistaken, there's already some evidence of them being in the Aina already. If you drive by the golf course, you can see it clearly. Like they've really
Yeah.
taken over there.
We actually
So,
worked with the county to do a grant program for CRB response for different sites. And there's a couple sites in Wailua. So it's been identified. It's there.
yeah.
If it's not in Coco Palms, which I would be shocked if it wasn't, it will be for sure.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but it's probably only a matter of time. And so
Yeah, it's up in
there's a
the
lot of things.
homesteads, you know. I mean, it's on the homesteads, it's down near the golf course, it's on a hole, it's surrounding that whole area, so guarantee, sadly.
Yeah, it's really hard to drive by and see the evidence of it. But going back to the hotel, you know, it's been, like I said, relatively quiet, but that's not to say that things aren't going to move forward, that they're still planning to build the hotel. We have that at the forefront of our minds, that, you know, just to get ready for when they move forward with that, and how do we deal with it? And we really are capacity when it comes to having hotels here on the island. I don't know where you live, Megan, but like I said, I live in Kapa'a, but I'm from Wailua, and I have to pass that way all the time. And there's so much traffic. the infrastructures, I mean, all of that is just so many things at play that's really, we just don't need any more of that. And then climate change, flooding, all of those things are just things that we really need to be paying attention to. And a hotel is really like the last thing that we need right now.
Yeah, I mean the hotels we have aren't at capacity right now. We live in Lawai actually, so we're near like Kailua, Poipu, and all that. So, their places are not packed. Our tourism numbers are down. They're trending down. So, why do we think we need a demand? I mean, the one thing I have to say, I like see, and I think a lot of people, no matter what side of the argument they're on, they appreciate seeing the site get cleaned up, right? So it's kind of nice. Like, let them do their thing. Let them get it like restored and all that trash taken out and all the rubbish. Maybe we wait to fight them on it when they start building, not when they're cleaning it up, and let them clean it up. I feel like there's a lot of people that are happy to see kind of the eyesores get worked on at least. Even though it's such a sensitive area on that site to even have that kind of work get done. And do you get a sense if that's being handled professionally and appropriately?
That's another really tricky thing, and I don't, and that's my own personal opinion. I feel like they didn't really handle it sensitively, sense with enough sensitivity. And the cultural part of it is another issue too. I know that they have a cultural monitor on site, which I'm really grateful for, but that's a lot of kuleana to place on one person. And there should have been more community engagement, more kupuna engagement, more lineal descendant engagement, to really navigate how this was all going to come down and what happens when you find bones and how do you take care of that and making sure that nothing is being destroyed. And we really have no, like I said, well, this is my own personal opinion. I really have no idea if everything's being handled correctly and in a pono way. So I think that would have been one area where it would have been good to have a little bit more conversation and find out what exactly they're doing and how things will be handled when something happens.
Right, because guarantee things are happening. I mean, that site
Guarantee.
history alone, we know there's burials there. One of my Kapuna friends is telling me stories of him overseeing work on that site way back when and finding graves and of multiple people and things like that. So it's like we know things have happened at that site. So yeah, I think transparency is really what makes people not worry. And they don't seem super concerned with being transparent, so people don't worry. So of course everyone's going to worry, that's expected, I think. So is there still a legal battle going on against the hotel? I remember there was some steps where they were trying to like block them on EISs, block them on leases. Yeah, what's going on there? Like what's perhaps
I can't disclose too much,
fair, fair,
but
fair. We don't
what
want to
I
hear any
can
strategy or
say
anything.
no. Legal wise, yes, we're still fighting some of the areas in which they're not following protocol and not following systems and permitting and all of those things. And even going back to the cultural part of it, like environmental assessments, cultural assessments, a lot of these things really needed to be done with more sensitivity. And there's a lot of questions that are going unanswered. And so on the legal side, yes, there is still a definite fight in that area to make sure that everything is done in a, like I said, in a pono way, but making sure that everything is fully disclosed, that we know everything that is going on, we know how everything is being handled. And so there is definitely some legal things that are going on for sure.
So is there
So
still a
that part hasn't stopped.
Yeah, I guess I'm just curious because everyone I get asked it a lot, even though I'm not really even associated. They just know, we care about stuff like that. And everyone always asks me for updates. And I'm like, I'm not really sure. Is there still a chance that this might not happen, or is it guaranteed? Is there still hope that we don't
There's still
get this
hope. There's
hotel?
still
All
hope.
right. I mean,
Let's just say there's still hope.
we drive all over the island too, and that's our traffic chokehold. Why you would
Yes.
put something there with like, yeah, the whole thing's ridiculous to me, but
There's still hope. I mean, there's until that hotel is built, there's still hope. you know? So, and even if a building gets built, who knows? It might turn into something really fabulous, like a cultural center. So there's still hope. And so, to answer your initial question on the legal side, yes, we are still fighting some of the battles that need to be fought. The areas that we feel there needs to be more transparency, that people need to be more up and up, that protocols do need to be followed. If the rest of the Kauai community needs to follow certain protocols, then I feel the developers of this hotel should also be held accountable.
All right, I am here talking to Pua Rossi of Iola Wailuanui about what is happening down at Coco Palms and some other cool stuff their nonprofit's working in. So thanks again for sticking with us on our inaugural show and podcast for KKCR. And we were just talking a little bit about the legal battles that there's still hope this hotel might not go through for those who are hoping it doesn't, who might not want to deal with the traffic and other issues along the way. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what you guys are working on. I know it's not just fighting the hotel, but building a sense of education and knowledge and appreciation and renewal and restoration for Wailua and that whole area. So what else is happening?
So, a few months ago, we signed an agreement to take over the stewardship of Malaeheo, which is right across the way from where the Coco Palms Hotel used to sit.
So maybe you can talk to me a little bit about how you guys got a hold of the stewardship agreement. How'd that start?
Okay, so how that started was a few months ago, actually longer than a few months ago, a little over a year ago, we were asked to kind of help clear up Malaeheo. So this one of our kupuna, Kula Schumacher, took it upon himself to start going to the heiau and clearing it up. And he was really active. I mean, he was going daily to just clear the heiau and even the heiau across the street, Hikinakala. And before Uncle Kula, it was Mark Boyser, if I'm not mistaken, was there. And so these guys were going regularly and cleaning up the area, but Kula really, really took it to the next level and just cleared it up to the point that people are like, "What is that?" I remember I had quite a few people asking me. I was getting messages like, "What is that big structure across from the hotel by Lydgate?"
Awesome.
And
And it was always there.
it was always there. And Malai is the largest heiau on Kauai now. It wasn't the largest, but it is the largest now. It's about 3 acres. The largest heiau on Kauai was Puhio Heiau in Nawiliwili over by where Kauai High School is. That one was about 4 acres, and that one's been long destroyed. But Malai is the largest that is still visible, that it still has its structure in place. And so Uncle Kula was going down there regularly. You could see it, but it's a lot of work for one person. So we started going down and helping out where we could. And again, going back to something I mentioned earlier, it was really listening to Aina and what does the Aina need. And our group, Iola Wailuanui, we were having a conversation about how can we get the community more engaged? Because if you can't actually go onto the property where the old Coco Palms Hotel sits, it's really hard to build a connection with that place. And that's not to say that it's impossible. You can absolutely have a connection to a place, but to actually physically put your feet on the ground and put your hands into the soil.
Mom on it.
Exactly. It's hard sometimes to really have that fire you need. And so just lo and behold, this happens where we get this kahea, this call to, "Can you guys come and help us out? Can you come and help Uncle out?" So we went a few times, and then, like I said, it's a lot for one person to take to do. And so after a while, it took a toll on Uncle Kula, and so he had to step away from doing all of the great work that he was doing. But we didn't want to let all of the work that he did go to waste. And so we started talking with other members of the community, the county being one of them. And so in January, in January, we signed an agreement with an Adopt the Park program with the DLNR Division State of Parks. And so we have an adoption agreement that Iola Wailua Nui will help in maintaining Malai Heiau. So we volunteer there. We're supposed to make sure that we are clearing up the space. We are working with other individuals. We've spoken with Department of Hawaiian Homelands because the property behind that heiau is actually Hawaiian Homelands. Working with other people that have done archaeological work and site surveys and assessments, like Martha Yent, working with them to kind of let's clear it, great, but let's actually make it into something that's functionable that our community can plant things or gather, do things there. And so in May, we started working with a cultural advisory committee that includes people like Kamanao Pono Crab, Halenu Uhiva, Ku'u Aloha Ho'omanawa Nui, Keauna Smith, Randy Wickman, even spoke with Kamana Beamer, who runs the Hawaiian Studies program at UH Manoa, and created like a cultural advisory committee. Not all of them were able to attend, but those that were able to attend and those that weren't able to attend were able to share Manao with the hopes that this heiau has a genealogical history, right? It has a history of, when I say a genealogical history or a genealogy of place, it's like it's gone through several stages. And so traditionally, it's always been tied to the voyager Mo'ikeha, who's kind of infamous throughout Hawaii as being this incredible voyager who lived in Raiatea and Tahiti, lived in Waipio, lived in Honolulu, and then eventually made his home here on Kauai.
You know what might be helpful? I'm just thinking there might be some listeners, because KKCR has people from all over the world. They might not even know what we're talking about. So can you explain to those folks who aren't familiar, like, what is a heiau? What
sure.
are the different types of them, right? Because I'm like, Uncle must be stoked, first of all, that you guys have brought this whole hui together to continue something that his heart was into.
Oh, he did such beautiful. A great job. I mean, we can't even touch what he did. You know, he was there dedicated every day just about. And yeah, we're not doing him justice, unfortunately, because we can't
you
be
will,
there every day.
Will.
But we'll get there. We'll get there.
But yeah, for those who aren't familiar, like, maybe talk a little bit about what heiaus are.
So a heiau, this is a hard question to answer because you're going to have different interpretations depending on who you learned from and who you've read from. But generally, a heiau is usually a place where religious services were conducted. So, and that could differ depending on the island, depending on the gods that were worshipped, depending on who worshipped there. But for the most part, they would be areas where religious services would be conducted. And depending on what that place was used for, would determine who was worshiping there and how. So some heiau were used for asking for abundance. So that could be like an abundance of food, an abundance of rain, an abundance of fish. Other heiau could be used for women giving birth, or for women to worship their gods, their female deities. And then there were some that were used by the ali'i, and these were the ones that were often the larger of the heiau. They were, and heiau are constructed with rocks, and you're not doing really anything to the rocks. You're stacking rocks, and you're making sure that the rocks in their natural form usually fit. And so sometimes the heiau would be really simple, where you'd have a small, maybe, I don't know, maybe like a 3x3 and then 3 foot height. And then some are huge, elaborate walled enclosures, terraced rocks. There's a heiau on Maui called Pi'ilani Hale that, I mean, it is the largest of this type of structure in all of Pacific. Well, I shouldn't say the Pacific, but I know at least in Polynesia, it's huge and it's stories high. It's not just like a few feet high. And so the larger heiau tended to be used by the ali'i, which would be your chiefly class. And it depending on what they would use it for. Some would use it for human sacrifice. Some would use it as a place to offer some kind of sacrifice. Didn't have to be human, to their gods. Some were used to ask for wisdom, for knowledge, for a long reign, progeny, you know, like giving birth, fertility. So it ran the gamut. But generally, they were used as places of worship and ritual, depending on what you needed. And Malay is, as I mentioned, the second largest. And so most likely it was used by the ali'i.
And there's
Although
a
there
huge
are
concentration of them in Wailua too, in terms of like our
Wailua as
island.
in, oh yeah, Wailua as in Ahupua'a, which is, you know, generally our Mauka to Makai sources of food, right? So you would an Ahupua'a would usually run from the uplands out into the ocean, and then it was like a social political unit, also a unit for food production. So you could get your fish supply, you could get your food supply. And Wailua boasts the largest concentration of heiau within one Ahupua'a on Kauai. So everybody talks about there being seven sacred heiau in Wailua. There's seven really significant heiau in Wailua, but there's more than seven. Way more than seven. But Malai falls within that seven, those seven really highly sacred heiau. So for Malai, as I mentioned, it went through like this series of history of where things shifted in what it was used for. And so it may have at one time been used as a sacrificial heiau. Other scholars have said that it was used as a source of knowledge, almost like a place where knowledge was gathered and shared and disseminated. And then in the 1820s, after our last king, King Paumualii, left Kauai, and his wife, who remained, Deborah Kapule. So his wife, Deborah Kapule, was living at Coco Palms at the time. So where Coco Palms sits was where our last king's wife lived. And so in that space, in where Coco Palms used to be, she actually started the first ever church on Kauai. And that one was called Luakini o Moikeha, named after Moikeha. And so Moikeha, this incredible voyager, comes to Kauai, and they think he may have been tied to this heiau. His name shows up a lot when we do research on the heiau itself. And so during Deborah Kapule's time, sorry, I'm jumping all over the place, but during Deborah Kapule's
Fascinating. I love
time in the
it.
1820s, she takes another husband because Paumualii is gone, and she marries a man by the name of Simeona Kaiu, who is a Christian. And because the heiau start closing down in 1819, and then later on, she converts to Christianity. Her and her husband decide that they're going to close that heiau down and turn it into a cattle pen. So
Oh.
once it gets turned into a cattle pen, it shifts things. So the rocks are moved, the doors are moved. So things kind of shift during that time, and the use of the heiau shifts during that time. Then I'm not sure of the date, but during the plantation era, the purpose of the heiau shifts yet again, and then it becomes a garden for the workers. I don't know what plantation it was at the time, but it shifts again, and so the workers start using it as garden plots. So then you see the rocks inside shift again, and then there's an Owai system or an irrigation system that goes through the heiau and exits out of the heiau. So it's gone through all of these different shifts. All of these different, like historic, to kind of follow what's going on historically, the heiau is reflecting all of that. And then it just kind of closes down completely. So as a kid, I didn't even know it was there. Like I said, I grew up, I was born and raised in Wailua. I didn't know that thing was there. And then I may have been about maybe 12 years old, 12 or 13. And I was homeschooled. So my dad always looked for opportunities for me to do Hawaiian anything. Hawaiian anything. So like at four, I was dancing hula. So anything that I could do culturally. And he had heard about a tour on the heiau of Wailua that was going to be done by Pila Kikuchi, who at the time was like the premier archaeologist for Kauai. So here I am, this like 12-year-old girl going on this tour of Wailua Heiau with Pila, and he's sharing all of these different stories, and he starts talking about Malai, and I'm like, what heiau is that? And he shares all about Malai. So I start learning about all of the heiau in Wailua, and it just completely fascinated me. That actually led me into kind of where my degree program went into, because I was just fascinated by this and learned quite a bit about Malai. And then when I was maybe 16 or so, that's when the kahu that I mentioned earlier, they started really getting into Malai heiau, and they cleared up everything. There was a huge banyan tree in the heiau. They took that out. They started looking at how the rocks were, how they could clear it up. But they never fully were able to clear a lot of the outside. So people started seeing movement and knew something was happening there and knew that there was a heiau there. But they never really got to see the full picture of it until Uncle Kula came in years later. So after the kahu did all the great work that they did, they kind of had to stop working in there because of issues with like getting the county to support them, and there were a lot of issues that happened, and so they had to step away from the work. And then again, the heiau just got overgrown. People forgot that it was there again. And then when Uncle Kula came in and started clearing it up, it reawakened it again, because then now people could really see it from the road, and they're like, whoa, what's happening there? So our hope, Megan, is that we are the last to start this renaissance of this heiau. Like, we're the last ones. We're hoping
Right.
that this will
Keep
be
it
the last
going.
time, and it will keep the momentum going.
And it all kind
But
of started with Uncle asking for forgiveness and not permission, right? Like a lot of these things do.
oh
You
yeah, he just went
gotta
in
go
there.
do, yeah. And then like people let you do it later. Like
Yeah,
you doing it.
he got in there. But
Yeah.
we know we can't do things at this heiau traditionally, because it did go through changes. It's gone through cycles. If it was a human sacrifice heiau, we are definitely not doing that.
Right.
But we still want to make the heiau, or and the site, one that is useful to this generation, to this era of Hawaii's history. We want to use it in a way that reflects 2025, because we're not museum relics, right? We're not just like, oh, it's going to look really nice and it'll just be this thing that's there that people can admire from the road. No, we want to actually make it functionable again. But how do we make it functionable in a way that reflects Hawaii today, and a culture that is very much alive today? And so that's where the cultural committee group came in, where we started asking people that were part of heiau restoration, that are part of Hawaiian studies, that are part of reawakening Indigenous knowledge, and how do we make this space functionable and relevant to today, but still respectful of the history and all of the people that came before it?
And sharing the history, I mean, every heiau, I love going to read the signs in front of every heiau I find. Like, stumble across and there's a sign. I get really excited because I think just general people understanding what they're for makes them respect those spaces more too. Because, you know, if someone doesn't know what they are, we do have a lot of visitor traffic in Wailua. They like to poke around, you know. If they don't know what something is, like, they'll let their kids crawl on the walls and things like
Yeah.
that. So destroy rocks.
I've seen quite a lot of rocks being stacked
Oh,
in
the rock
places
stacking.
they should not be stacked. Just leave the rocks alone.
And for those that are listening that maybe don't have a background again in Hawaiian culture, can you talk about why people shouldn't stack rocks and why they need to leave rocks alone and
Oh, yeah. I mean, the rocks are put there for a reason. And so moving them and shifting them and creating your own little stack of rocks doesn't do the site any service. It's actually seen as rather disrespectful. And also because on a practical side of it, if you move one significant rock, you may trigger some other movements of rocks that we don't want to happen. And our kupuna knew how to stack rocks in a way that rock wall could stand the test of time, but it just takes one movement of a
right,
rock that could
like
bring the whole thing.
Tetris, Tetris
So like
football.
don't touch what all the great work that's already been
Yeah,
done.
don't be the guy that crumbles a wall that's been standing for hundreds of years
No,
before
yeah,
you.
thank you.
Cool. So, what else is going on for Cocoa Palms? I mean, it sounds like that's a really cool thing that's happening in the
Oh, it's
future.
amazing.
If people want to get involved, like, is it appropriate for just random people to get involved? Are you looking for like descendant engagement first, or how do people get involved with all the work that you guys are doing over there?
What a great question. When it comes to Wailua Nui, any and all hands on deck. We can use any support, any kakou'o. One of the things that I didn't touch upon, but is really important to say, is that we really want to promote education of these places. I'm not surprised, but yet I'm still surprised when I talk with people that were born and raised here that have no idea that those heiau are there, that had no idea that there's a burial site there, that had no idea who some of these people were that walked these ali'i. That walk the very steps of the places that we're walking today and why these areas were significant. So education is really critical, and it's definitely a huge part of what Iola Wailua Nui is trying to do, is getting the information out there to the right people. Like, we want to educate our Kauai community first and foremost. Then we want to educate the Hawaii community, and then the rest of everyone else. But really, it's like, how do we get this knowledge into the hands of our Kauai community first and share like why these places were important, and how they can still be important to today's world. So education is key. And then the other thing that our group is still focused on is trying to restore a lot of the food production systems that were there. There's a lot of Lo'i, there's evidence of terraces that are still in the area. The fish ponds that everybody thinks, or the lagoons, I should say, that were on the Coco Palms Hotel, those were actually fish ponds back in the day. They were traditional Lo'i that were dredged and like recalibrated to make them into these aesthetic ponds, but they're still ponds that could be used as Lo'i that could still produce fish and food for people, so that they don't have to buy their fish from the Philippines or from other parts of the world. Because like a lot of our poke, when we go to say Safeway or Foodland, it's not from here. So we could sustain our food production systems by simply reopening some of these structures that our kupuna put into place. And as I mentioned, they were so skilled at building these systems that even though some of these systems haven't been in use for hundreds of years, doesn't mean that they couldn't be returned to their once important glory.
See, I'm here with Pua Rossi talking about Iola Wailua Nui, and we're just talking about education and opportunities for the future development of the site. Do you want to continue? Maybe talk about more of what you see for education, what you guys are hoping to develop, any plans?
So we're also working with other organizations to get more educational components out there. And so we're currently working with an Indigenous data hub that comes out of the University of Hawaii. And we're also working with Kalu Kalu, which is the old Otsuka building. And trying to get some of this information in a way that's attractive to our younger learners who love the digital world and love looking at things from all different perspectives. So instead of just like from a book or from a lecture, like looking at it in a technological sense. And so we're working to do some of that as well. And then again, with the education, it's working with schools. And Mason and I do talks with people like Kamehameha Schools, and we've worked with Kanai Okana to produce videos. And we've even done lectures for Kupuna. We've done lectures for elementary school kids to really share the significance of these places, and with the hope that, they'll get activated and they'll want to engage in their community in a way that's really meaningful and, gives a sense of pride. Like you and I both have kids. So, and we've been in groups where our kids have been together. And so I know your son, especially, I've seen him, he's a powerhouse like mine. Like I just see it's really cool. Like my 10-year-old, he gets so engaged in it and wants to learn about it and wants to hear all about these stories. And even for his final project, he went around and learned about all these different sites of Wailua and presented it to his school. And just, yeah, like just seeing these kids get involved and get engaged, it's amazing. And this is their home. I mean, imagine you're so proud of your home that you want to learn everything that you can about it and then share it with everybody. And so that's another thing that we've seen happen with Iolawai Luanui's efforts. It's, yeah, there's a legal side to it. Yeah, there's a trying to protect a really significant place, but then there's also this Keiki to Kupuna pathway that's happening where our kids are running alongside these Kupuna as they're sharing these stories and they're soaking it all up, and it gives the Kupuna an opportunity to share these incredibly valuable lessons and life histories that we may not otherwise have known if we didn't have the opportunity to create these spaces that Iolawai Luanui has been doing. And that's another thing is that we've done a few events. We've got a few more coming up. And so if you sign up at our, we have a website, which is iolawailuanui.org, or sorry, not Iolo, wailuanui.org. And if you sign up there, you can get our email updates. But we do have some events coming up where, again, we want the community to be involved, and we want to give the opportunity for Kupuna to share stories and for Keiki to hear about those stories.
Well, and I think there's something so powerful too about creating like community engagement and ownership of a space so that you can prove too, like if you give the community access and stewardship, look what they can do with a space. And then it encourages them to give more of that land, right? Because back in the day before ownership was an ownership thing, it was really who took care of these places and who stewarded them. And that was the owner in a way, because you were the one putting in the work to
Exactly.
care for them. So if we really want the community to have ownership of these spaces, the community has to take ownership of these spaces and they have to step up and do the work to show that, they deserve it, that it is something that we will as a community care for in a way that we can handle and we can take on more and keep bringing stuff back to the community to care for. And that's such a great visible sight to really flourish the start of that work of community regaining access and ownership to those spaces. So that's very
Oh,
cool.
absolutely. And Wailua was never meant to be a tourist playground. I mean, none of Hawaii
None
was
of
meant to be
it.
that, but it's really hard to see like the fight that we have to do to protect a place that was so sacred. I just kind of briefly touched on Deborah Kapule, but I can say historically, Wailua, so when the first people to settle here, when they came to Kauai, they settled first in Waimea, and there was another wave that came over and they settled in Wailua. And Wailua really flourished. So some of these ali'i that you hear about in songs or you see their names on buildings, they lived in Wailua. They were born in Wailua. They were raising their children in Wailua. And so that place has so much significance. And the amount of stories, the amount of chants that reference Wailua, it's amazing. So it was never meant to be a place where tourists got to play in and drink their Mai Tais. I mean, it was always meant to be a religious, social, political, cultural center. That's how our kupuna envisioned it. That's how we envision it. And why not? Now is the time. Now is the time for us to start to reclaim these aina that were so significant and do something with it, do something positive with it. So that's a lot of what we there's so many things. There's so many things that our group is doing. And it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And it's also hard because with every challenge comes, we have gone through a lot of losses. We don't win every fight, and we've lost more fights than we've won. But the biggest triumphs, Megan, have definitely been the community awareness and the community like activation. Like hearing that people want to know what's going on with Coco Palms and are passionate about it and are invested in it. Oh, that really lights me up because that means that we're doing something right that people want to know. They're invested in it. They have aloha for this place, and that's why they're asking about it.
Absolutely. And they know how special it is. Like, I feel like people are like looking at it like, is this Kauai's mauna? Is this our moment? This, they're like getting their camping supplies ready, waiting for a kahea like
Oh,
to roll
yeah. Get
out,
it
you
ready,
know?
guys.
Yeah. Like, they're ready, you know? And I think, even, Mauna Kea and all that stuff, education was so central to all of that. The cultural lessons, I mean, you being a cultural educator, language educator especially, like that's your wheelhouse, your calling. It's something you've given so much of your life to. So it aligns so closely, I think, to protecting a space is so central to
Yeah.
education
Oh, thank you.
about it. You know, it's very kind of aligns very cool like that. Speaking of which, like, we talked a little bit about education. You mentioned videos. Do you guys have videos online? Are they on your website on YouTube if people want to learn more about the space? Sounds great. And you guys
Eventually, the goal is to put it on the website. That's the
right. And
eventual goal.
you guys are on socials. People can find you. Do you want to spell out your name and website for those that
Yes.
don't
So
pick up
it's
on that?
WAILUANUI, WailuaNui.org.
And then, obviously you guys are going to need a lot of backbreaking labor help, cleaning all these sites up, doing like physical restoration work. What other kinds of help are is needed? Do you need like that tech help to build your educational website hub? Are there roles people can help support who might not be able to do the physical work?
Everything and all things. That's it. Everything and all the
Nonprofit
things.
life,
Yeah, nonprofit life. You know how that is. We have such a great team and we have hands in all these different facets that you just mentioned. But the more hands, the better. The more fuli kalima ilalo, meaning the more people who are willing to turn their hands over and do the work, the
And have the
better. But
time, right? The
that
time
have
is
the time,
the
but
hardest
even
part.
if you just have 1 hour a month, that's helpful. So we always are looking for help with like communications. I didn't mention her, but she is so worth mentioning. We had a really amazing person that kind of ran all the behind the scenes. Her name is Jordan. But Jordan just, congratulations, Jordan. Jordan just had a baby. So Jordan is not on our team right now. She's on maternity. She'll be back. But she ran a lot of our communications. Fern, again, going back to Fern being such a powerhouse with Instagram, and now we don't have that. So those are some of the things where if you're not able to actually physically get in the LAN or be here, we're always looking for like the techie guys too. We got a great bunch of people that are really good with that, but we also know like the more hands on deck, the better.
Yeah, but do you have a favorite story or something that gets you excited?
Oh gosh, I would say it's not one favorite story. There's multiple stories, but I would like to acknowledge Mo'ikeha's granddaughter, because I think it's really cool. Like Kauai's women were held in incredibly high esteem, and one of those
As
women
they
was
should.
Kai'i. Yeah, right. And so Ka'ili Lau Okekoa was the granddaughter of Moikeha, and she was a ali'i wahine. She was actually a ruler of the Wailua area after her uncle passes away. And so just the fact that Wailua had a woman that was in charge is pretty darn cool. And so she's tied to a heiau further up, which is Pihana Kalani. But her family is part of that whole stretch of heiau. So her grandfather, as I mentioned, was Moikeha. Her uncle was La'a Mai Kahiki, who brings the first pahu drum to Hawaii. And not only does he bring the first pahu drum to Hawaii, he also brings, we think, he brings the first wooden images to Hawaii. That so if you go and you go to a heiau and you see those wooden ki'i or images there, that was tied to Wailua. The first ever to come to Hawaii was tied to Wailua. But Ka'ili Lau Kekoa is tied to the first ever nose flute. So the nose flute that was introduced or was brought to, not brought to, but the first ever nose flute was first played in Wailua. And so again, all these firsts are tied to Wailua. So all these things that like you go to explorations with Kamehameha schools, you might make a nose flute. Because I remember when I was a kid, that's what you would make. You'd make a nose flute. Guess what? It started in Wailua. If you're a hula dancer and you dance to the pahu, guess what? Wailua, that's where it started. All from these heiau, all these areas that we're talking about. If you are interested in carving and you carve these ki'i, Wailua. So all of these things were so significant and they all started off in Wailua. But I like Ka'ili Lau Kekoa's story because she was this woman that she was supposed to marry a chief from Waimea. Wasn't digging it. And she's like, whatever. I'm more interested in surfing and playing Konane. She was an excellent Konane player. And she is seen by this other chief who's like, whoa. And he's living up Wailua, up in Pihana Kalani Heiau. And his mother tells him, I'm going to fashion a nose flute for you in Ohe Hanuihu. And you play it. And if she hears it and she comes to you, it's meant to be. The story
Ooh.
is way longer than what I'm giving, but in
I
the
got
interest
tickets
of
to get already,
time,
though. I was
in the interest
invested.
of time, he plays it, she hears it, and she ventures up Mauka and finds him, and they end up getting married. And later on, the sad part is that he dies fairly early, but that chief that she was supposed to marry in Waimea decides to wage war against the Wailua faction because, or the Wailua chiefs speak. Partly out of, insult that she didn't marry him, she married somebody else.
Ego.
Yeah.
That's why it's nice
She
when women are in charge, though.
gets in there, Megan. Like she actually trains the women to fight, and she fights right alongside those men. And they win. They win. And so
Oh.
I named my son, part of his name has Okekoa in it. And when I first told him that he was named after this wahine, he's like, oh, mom. I'm named after, he was young at the time. He's like, I'm named after a girl.
Like
And then I told him, right.
the
And I tell him the story. And then he like puffs out his chest. He's like,
coolest
oh,
girl ever.
yeah.
Oh, we gotta talk to Momoa. That needs to be the next like Apple TV movie.
We don't need that. We can do it on Kauai.
Right. That is a great story though. Wow. Awesome. Well, thanks for taking so much of your time today to talk story, give us
No
updates.
problem. Thanks for having me.
If you're listening and you missed it, that's Pua Rossi with Iola Wailuanui. You can see their website at wailuanui.org. They need lots of help, physical restoration, techie things. Get connected if you care about that space or want to learn more. Anything else you
Yeah.
want to add?
Wailuanui.org. Sign up for our emails and learn how to get involved.
Awesome. Mahalo.
Mahalo, Megan.